That's Matthew Szosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Szosie.
Best we can, big shoes to fill. I'm Christopher Lloyd, and with me is
Joe Shear,
Austin Major.
You've got, we've got like two thirds of Team Yap here today, I think.
Yeah, and the two junior members, we should say, at least in terms of age.
Yes, certainly not in terms of contribution and worth. I don't think we should be sticking in with that junior Yap or thing. I mean,
yeah, we talked about that briefly. Yeah, they're like we said, in terms of age, but as we all know, age is just a number, and they're both very, very talented and very, very worthy members of being on Team Yap and being here today.
Thank you.
I'm loving the show so far.
And for the rest of the show, we will talk about our decisions in bringing extra people in on the Film Yap.
All right, well, we do have, it's kind of, we're getting towards the end of the summer now, at least as far as movies are concerned, but we do have one big release for the week, and that is the new comedy starring Mark Wahlberg and that guy whose name I never like to say, Will Ferrell. Is it Ferrell or Pharrell? Or?
I believe it's Ferrell. As
Ferrell,
well,
like he, you know, he was a cat out living in the wild, and he was Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, here is The Other Guys.
Tell me once again why I got on this roof.
I chalked that up to bad life choices.
In the toughest city in the world, nobody fights crime like these guys.
Somebody call 911. Holy shit.
And then there's the other guys.
Stop humming that song.
We know.
All the gunfights, all the car chases, all the sex we don't want to have with women, but we have to, all due to what you guys do.
And we do it again and again.
Hey, hey, hey! If I want to hear you talk, I will shut my arm and work your mouth like a puppet.
Peace out. Real characters.
Are you stopping me?
What?
I think you're a fake cop.
I hear a guy who's probably a little insecure.
All units, we've got a possible jumper.
We all know you're in a very dark place right now.
I'm gonna do it!
You're feeling as if sweet death is your only release.
Oh, we got a second jumper!
Oh, look, he's fine!
Hi.
Who are you?
I'm his wife.
This is a ball and chain.
Ooh,
come on, seriously, who is that?
I am a real cop.
I'm working on a huge case.
You're coming with me.
That's a wooden gun.
Oh!
Listen up. We need your cooperation.
Run!
We are doing a lot of property damage.
Oh, cool, a helicopter.
Where'd you learn to drive like that?
Grand Theft Auto.
I want to do good cop, bad cop. I'm Trump, and then you come in.
Got it.
I want to know everything now.
Hey, well, I'll talk to you. You're reasonable.
No, no. You want to talk to me?
I thought you said bad cop, bad cop.
I am a peacock. You gotta let me fly.
Pick another bird. Peacocks, they don't fly, Terry. They don't, do they?
Just let them have it, Captain.
The other guys.
Right, there you go, The Other Guys, the kind of odd couple comedy. I actually did not get to see this, Chris. I know you did. So what did you think?
believe it or not, it was actually pretty good, considering this is Will Ferrell with his pet director, Adam McKay, also the guys who teamed up on that website, Funny or Die, which also has, by the way, Eva Mendes starring in a new Funny or Die web video that's absolutely hilarious. Just, and she's also in this movie. You remember, this is basically the same team that did Land of the Lost from a year ago, which was so bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost to the point of unwatchable. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a pretty fast-paced and fun comedy. I called it scattershot comedy. And it's just, you know, joke. There's almost no setup. It's just joke. Lots of ad-libbing, lots of throwaway jokes, lots of gags and one-liners. Mm-hmm. And some of it does not, you know, it just goes against the wall and falls in the ground. But plenty enough of it sticks. So I actually thought it was pretty decent.
And that Ferrell McKay team balances itself out with Land of the Lost by bringing us also Anchorman. So,
which I think is actually overrated.
Does that average out to a C? Or, I don't know.
I'm not entirely convinced Adam McKay. I don't think he directed Land of the Lost. Did he?
I think you're actually right. He may not have did, but he did Talladega Nights.
Yeah, and Step Brothers.
Anchorman and Step Brothers. Yeah, I think you're right. He may not have actually done
Step Brothers. Step Brothers is the same thing.
I think he may have had a hand in the script, but they're kind of, you know, joined at the waist. They do a lot of projects together.
Yeah.
Now, I saw Steve Coogan was in the other guy. Is he good? Is he ever going to get his big Hollywood break through these movies?
Not if this movie is any indication, then no. My biggest problem with this movie was that it's very plot heavy. You've got all these different things and intrigues going on, which really never fit together. Steve Coogan plays this shady investor guy who apparently has lost a bunch of money belonging to some billionaire played by Anne Heche, who just comes on. She's always on the phone when we see her, yelling about, "Where's my money?" And Steve Coogan is apparently terrified of Anne Heche. And then, you know,
let me interject. I'm terrified of Anne Heche.
Yeah, me
also.
Too. Let's get that. Let's clue this up right now. Who all here is terrified of Anne Heche?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's
definitely
all.
Yeah.
Good. Now we can do a horror show, right?
And you've got, I think, Ray Stevenson is the actor. He was in that Rome miniseries on HBO. He plays an Australian black ops guy, and it's just all these strange plot threads that we never really understand. Something to do with scaffolding, you know, that the Will Ferrell character realizes that Steve Coogan's character has all this illegal scaffolding, and that leads to all these attempts to assassinate them and stuff like that. Am I the only one here that saw this one?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, I think so. Now, also Samuel L. Jackson and The Rock are both in this, right?
Yeah,
Dwayne
although he's
Johnson.
Yeah, he's Rockless.
The Rock.
Dwayne The Rock.
Yeah. Actually, he's Rockless. He's not going by The Rock anymore.
He's still The Rock.
He's the Tooth Fairy.
Now and forever.
Yeah. Are you saying that Dwayne Johnson is not as manly a name as The Rock? Actually, the manliest name ever was, there was a movie recently, I think it was Salt. There's a minor character in Salt by an actor who, unless IMDb is lying, the actor's name is Hunt Block. I just love that. It's like the two most masculine verbs on the planet, you know, combined into name. Hi, I'm Hunt Block. Well, I mean, even Dwayne Johnson would kind of feel a little.
Yeah.
That's like a name from Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
I joke that I try to think of something that was more masculine than Hunt Block. You know, and maybe if I change my name to like Slay Fertilize, that would be about it. But anyway, so yeah, Dwayne Johnson and Sam Jackson, who are they're only in it for maybe the first 10 minutes, and they are really a lot of fun. They essentially play like the Danny Glover, Mel Gibson, you know, the various buddy cop iterations, except over the top, and they're making fun of it and being satirical. And, you know, the idea is they do all the crazy stuff, and the Will Ferrell character and the Mark Wahlberg character just stay and do the paperwork. But now, when those two guys have some bad stuff happen to them, they get to step in.
Oh, okay.
Now, Will Ferrell has been around for a while. Do you think he has, I'm just curious, do you think he has the strength to be, like, the next Leslie Nielsen or someone like that?
What an honorable title.
By strength, I guess you meant the strength of the audience to endure him. Hmm. I don't know. I'm one of those people. I'm really up and down on Will Ferrell. I thought he was really great when he was on Saturday Night Live. It seemed like every skit he was in was like the one funny skit from that week. And you know, he started off pretty good with his movie career, Elf. But he's really kind of gone up and down and up and down. And I have not been as impressed by something like, you know, like Anchorman. I hear all sorts of people, your gentleman's age, that, you know, talk about Anchorman like it's their the Blues Brothers or Ghostbusters or, you know, like the funniest movie ever. And to me, it's like a lot of these comments, you know, these guys use a lot of improvisation. If you watch their DVDs, you know, sometimes they'll have outtakes which show them, you know, trying all these different lines, and they're just throwing stuff, you know, and then they edit it down to the five best takes, and that's what they use. And I don't know, my attitude on that is improvisation is really hard to do and do consistently, and you end up, you know, have these movies that sort of ride a roller coaster. And in this case, you know, it's mostly a good roller coaster, but a lot of time I've been on some of these Will Ferrell movies that, you know, it was more like, you know, It's a Small World After All.
Yeah.
In terms of laughs.
And the thing with that is, you know, when you do that, you're going to have so many, you know, you have to go by ratio, I think, almost of the Will Ferrell movie.
It's, yeah.
Like you said, you know, what sticks to the wall. And I mean, something like Step Brothers, I think I laughed. There was one scene I remember really laughing at. The rest of it, I was going, this is horrible. And it seems like there's a lot of movies like that. If he has a good, you know, 3 or 4 to 1 laugh to miss ratio, I think you can say it's good. I think Anchorman is probably his, you know, his big comedy. Maybe not his best film, but it's definitely going to be what he's probably best remembered for, other than the Saturday Night Live part, but as far as his film career goes. But, he's very hit or miss. Yeah, I have to agree with you.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, here's what we thought of The Other Guys.
Now that was a good movie!
All righty, so our next movie, we have Step Up 3D, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, like Friday the 13th 3D from back in the 80s. It's the third movie, and it's the third one, so we'll make it 3D. And I believe Austin is the only one here who is brave enough to volunteer to go to the Step Up 3D screening. And how exactly did we convince you to do that, Austin?
By promising a paycheck one of these
days. Yeah, I think we've been making that promise for a long time.
I hope you guys know by now that if it does come, that they're going to be miniature paychecks.
Well, I mean, I've seen a bunch of really bad films this year. This one I wouldn't actually put down as long as, like, The Tooth Fairy or Charlie St. Cloud.
All right. Let's before we get too deep, let's take a little listen to Step Up 3D.
Welcome to my house. Dancers live together, work together, and battle together.
This place is incredible.
What you saw before is just the beginning.
You know I know how to make you stop to say that I
So tell me about yourself.
Everything you need to know is in my dancing.
Everything?
Every night up in the club, getting money with the thugs, thought I'd never fall in love.
What there was you?
What?
Girl, you changed my mind.
B-Fab.
What's a B-Fab?
Born from a boombox.
Get a big patada in the traste.
What?
Okay, you don't get it, but I know what I'm saying.
We're gearing up for the biggest battle ever.
If we're not focused, we could lose everything.
We've come way too far to stop now. So you ready?
Let's go.
One move can bring people together. One move can make you believe like you're something more.
Fall out the sense of business. All out is so ridiculous. Pop around, she's gonna make me poop.
Step Up 3D. Shot entirely in 3D.
Oh, that's so sick.
Join the party in theaters August 6th.
All right, one move can bring us together. The dance can change the world.
Just one move.
All it takes.
It really is.
So, Austin, how did that work? How did their one move change the world?
I don't know if I can point out any one move from the movie that changed my vision of the world, but
Are you saying the new Flo Rida track wasn't enough to do it?
No, that wasn't. Okay. No. It was close. It was on the edge, yeah. But not entirely. But I can happily report this is not the worst film of the year. It's also not the worst film of the trilogy. The Step Up films, after watching all three of them in one day, I am a dedicated worker for this site. these are basically films secretly wanting to be 1930s musicals. It is so much not about the plot. The plot is just an annoyance to get to the next dance scene. And the films work when they realize that and try not to have a plot, but they fail because they keep trying to have all these plots and subplots. Because the dancing, it is definitely unique. I said in my review I prefer still Ginger Rogers, but this is you have to admire the insane amount of creativity and dedication to do these moves. But unfortunately, Step Up 3D had maybe the dumbest plot of them all so far, which was they ran out of high school cliches doing the first two, so they decided to go to they have a perfect, wonderful Step Up mansion of sorts they have, but unfortunately they haven't paid the bill, so the bank's going to take that away. But how can they get the money?
Through dance.
Absolutely. There is a dance competition where the winner gets $100,000, just enough to pay the bills and keep the place open. Nice. So that is the cliche they chose for this one. But unfortunately, the main guy also wants to be a filmmaker, and he's making a documentary about the dance crew, and it's the worst documentary I've ever seen. The documentary is much worse than the film I was watching. But, of course, all the characters love the documentary and said, mm-hmm. You need to go to film school. But the subplot is what worked because you have Moose, a secondary character from the second film.
Moose?
His name is Moose. That's his nickname.
Okay.
It's very thug.
Okay.
I believe her name's Camille from the first movie. They end up being childhood friends, of course. But they have one of those, like, oh, they're best friends, but they don't realize they could be perfect boyfriend-girlfriends. Mm-hmm. It's that simple plot line. Bing Crosby could do it in his sleep. It's so simple. That's the kind of plot Step Up films should have. You don't need to have any thought behind them. And that subplot actually had one scene in the movie that I can honestly call great. It's the scene where after they had a fight and they made up and everything, they hear Fred Astaire's I Won't Dance, Don't Ask Me play on an ice cream truck. And what they do is they have a 2 to 3 minute one single shot of them dancing throughout the streets of New York over all these problem thing, and it's honestly a charming and a perfect Step Up scene. One of the best scenes I actually have seen this year.
Is it an homage to the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers stuff? Or
it was. It was almost like the blending of the two worlds, where it did acknowledge kind of, you guys are rolling your eyes, you don't believe me. It actually is a legitimately great scene. But unfortunately, there's still way, way too many dumb plot throughout the rest of the movie that you can only go so far with Step Up 3D. So it was okay, but not as horrendous as we all thought it was going to be.
What about the 3D itself? Was this one of those post-converts? Or
It didn't seem like it. I'm not a 3D expert.
It said it was shot entirely in 3D.
And it looked like it. There were still a few times when I was looking at the side of the screen, it was a bit blurry, because they're moving so fast with all these dance moves. And they do incorporate the 3D very well. They have the dancing go out into the thing, into the audience, when they have these robot moves and these kicks and various props keep being thrown out like water.
Is it like Bachelor Party where somebody actually gets kicked in the face?
No, it was a punch in Bachelor Party.
But
one got kicked in the face this time. But it was well, but I still don't think it's worth the admission price, I guess. I think it was better than a lot of 3D films this year in terms of 3D-ness, but mm-hmm. I guess you almost need to pay for the ticket just for because that's the camp value mm-hmm. Of this movie. It knows what it's doing with it, and it's definitely watchable throughout the whole film.
So would you, I heard you say it wasn't the worst step-up movie, would you say it was the best step-up 3D?
It's, tied. step-up is, again, the first one is a lot of flaws with its plotting. It actually tries to make you care about some of the characters, and no, just focus on the dance scenes. I mean, it even had, like, a funeral scene. Like, it tries to play too much, but it was never as stupid as step-up the streets, which was crazy stupid.
You know, it's funny how dancing movies kind of have, you know, these waves that they come about every 15 years or so mm-hmm. where people just, you know, have these dancing movies, you know, and they're suddenly popular again for about 2 years and then they go away. Like, I remember Strictly Ballroom probably about 15 mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not any secret that they're aimed mainly at a female audience. And I think in the Step Up 3D case, it's definitely a teenage. You know, this is aimed at 14, 15, 16-year-old girls, which mm-hmm. I don't begrudge that. I mean, there's been a lot of stupid movies for boys this summer, as mm-hmm. there is every summer, so why not a harmless one for the girls?
But I think that the step-up ones, actually, both my theater was still with both genders happily wanting to see it. My brother went because he loves, I think MTV has shows like this, where that's why I think this film is secretly a 1930s musical, because it can never say it's a musical of sorts, because it abides by the musical contrivances of they all perfectly improvise all these dances and all this simple plot. But I think this is Step Up, unlike Strictly Ballroom or even the Dancing with the Stars show, both genders are really liking it. Because
I'm surprised at that. And this was your brother, the quarterback?
Yeah, my brother, the quarterback, the high school quarterback football player.
All right, well, here's what we thought of, or more accurately, what Austin thought of Step Up 3D.
I think it's overrated.
Fuck you!
Okay, and we've got, one more new movie this week we're going to talk about. Just briefly to touch on a couple of this that, unfortunately, were not screened for local critics, and so, unfortunately, we haven't seen them. There's a drama called 12, just the number 12, and it stars 50 Cent, the rapper. So 50 Cent in 12, and I don't know how many stars it would get.
Can we call it 1150?
1250. I don't mind missing that one. I do regret that they did not screen for us Restrepo, which is a documentary about, is it about the Iraq War or the Afghan War? I can't remember.
Afghanistan.
Okay. I believe that's the star / narrator guy to that is Sebastian Younger, the writer and sometime filmmaker guy who did The Perfect Storm a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, none of us got to see that, so we can't tell you about Restrepo, but it sounds like it's at least interesting, a little more serious-minded than 1250. For the last new movie we are going to talk about is the IMAX Theater at the Indiana State Museum is opening up with a brand new documentary this week called The Wildest Dream, and let's just hear a little bit about that one.
George Mallory dreamed of being the first man to climb Everest. He and his fellow climber were last seen 800 feet below the summit. They were never seen alive again. 75 years after Mallory vanished, mountaineer Conrad Anker took part in an expedition looking for their bodies.
This is George Mallory.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I'm going to have this chance to go back and see what it was like for Mallory to try climbing Everest in 1924.
George Mallory and I are two paths have intersected, 75 years apart.
I know what it's like to be the wife of a climber who doesn't come home.
My dear one, I will be thinking of you as you set off for the summit.
Humans weren't meant to survive this altitude.
Suddenly, temperatures plummet to 20 below freezing.
There's no dream.
All right, and that's The Wildest Dream. And I personally love documentaries that look at historical facts and do sort of a what-if type of thing like this. You know, the basic premise here, of course, being is everyone acknowledges Sir Edmund Hillary as being the first person, along with his Sherpa, to summit Mount Everest in 1954. I think it was 53 or 54. And this would be the same Sir Edmund Hillary that Hillary Clinton once claimed to be named after, even though he did this, he made his summit after she was born. So I guess she was named after just, at that point, some anonymous guy. But anyway, it's very interesting thing like this to have the idea that something that pretty much everyone, you know, acknowledges, this is historical fact, this is something that, you know, made us one guy extremely famous for, became an icon, really. You know, I mean, I think he was knighted, obviously, everything mm-hmm. else, and comes up with this idea of, hey, it's entirely possible he was not the first, which isn't to necessarily take anything away from Hillary's ascent, but obviously if somebody did it 30 years earlier, mm-hmm. And, you know, the movie is not completely just pressing that point. You know, it's got sort of this parallel storyline of, you know, the modern day guy who actually found Mallory's body, which they recreate the discovery here in the movie, and it's imagine what a body looks like after sitting on the top of Mount Everest for 70 years. It's yeah. pretty frightening how well preserved the body is, just because there's nothing to deteriorate it. Mm-hmm. And so this parallel thing of these two guys recreating the historical ascent. They even have clothes made up and equipment made up to exactly match theirs, and they use it some of the time, not all of the time. They get to a certain point, and it's like, okay, we're going to the modern stuff. But they have like one area where, you know, for decades there's been a bolt ladder bolted into this one particularly almost perfectly sheer cliff right near the top, and so they actually have it removed and successfully summit this thing. That was the big question, was there's people doubted that these two men could have summited this almost sheer cliff with, you know, no modern equipment and obviously without this ladder. So that's just one small piece of evidence. The other thing, of course, is that when they found the body, he had all of his equipment and stuff on him, mm-hmm. Letters to his wife, all sorts of things. The one thing he did not have on him, which he was known to have, was a picture of his wife, which he had promised to leave at the top of Mount Everest,
yeah.
which leads a lot of people to believe that they actually made it and then died on the way back. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's very interesting. I do have to give one caveat. I did not see it in the IMAX theater. The Wildest Dream actually played at Indianapolis International Film Festival, so I actually saw it on my TV at home with a DVD. Slightly smaller screen, like 1% the size of, probably not even one, probably one-tenth of 1% the size of the IMAX screen at the State Museum, which is awesome if you've never been there. Mm-hmm. But still, it was a very interesting tale, well told. The director, he's a veteran producer of IMAX movies, and this was his first directorial effort, and I thought he really, really nailed it.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of actors I saw attached to it, like Ralph Fiennes and maybe Alan Rickman. Were they all narrators or what?
Yeah, what they were doing was, again, they have very, very good historical records, letters that these people wrote to each other, you know, the guy's journal, you know, that was found on him. And so I believe Ralph Fiennes does the voice of Mallory. Natasha Richardson does his wife. Liam Neeson is, I think, just the general narrator. There's one other British actor in there who I think does his number two, his partner, essentially, in the climb.
Okay. Sounds really good.
Yeah. That's one of those ones that a lot of people will not see just because it's only playing at the IMAX theater and they only do those, you know, foo-foo intellectual films that we don't like to go see.
Oh, yeah. People are crazy. I mean, Joe, you know, of course, a lot of people know recently you did a story for the Indy Star about, you know, raiding all the movie theaters in town. And mm-hmm. I mean, I have a lot of theaters out there that I love, you know, AMC Castleton, mm-hmm. The Rave out in Plainfield. But I mean, just for pure picture sound, I don't mm-hmm. think any theater in town comes even close to the IMAX at the State Museum.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And don't bother with those, you know, the fake, you know, IMAXs that, you know, there's one in Noblesville. There's one in on the south side of town. If you want to see true IMAX, you do have to go downtown.
Yeah, and plus those guys don't program these.
Yeah.
You know, well, educational, let's say, mm-hmm. you know, documentaries types yeah. of things. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, well, here's what we thought of The Wildest Dream.
Now that was a good movie.
All right. Well, we're going to take a brief break right now, and then we'll come back with some looks at this week's new video releases.
Yeah.
And more goodness from Team Film Yap.
Anything about either one of them.
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know what I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open
the
video
store. All right, the video store is open, as I believe Matthew loves to say. We're going to start off this week with a superhero movie that not a whole lot of people saw, from what I understand, and that is called, are we allowed to say Kick-Ass on the radio?
I think we are, yes.
You just said it already.
So oh, I did. Oh,
<It's> fine.
Sorry.
Kind of defeats the whole purpose there.
Hopefully that's not a $550,000 fine right there. So every time we say kick ass, we're gonna get another half a mil.
So did everybody here see Kick Ass?
I didn't. No.
I've seen it.
Oh.
Nope.
I've seen it.
Really, this movie really polarized audiences. Really mm-hmm. polarized critics. Ebert just not just gave it a bad review, but basically said it was like bad for humankind that this movie was made. And A.O. Scott of the New York Times, said it was morally reprehensible. And so it's a real split here. I thought it was near genius.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And, of course, it's based on I would call it an underground comic book, except it became such an overnight phenomenon that for a while it was actually like outselling, Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The thing I remember about this movie that I wrote in my review was there's a whole lot of movies out there that, pretend to be rebellious and cool and edgy, mm-hmm. but really are just, straightforward Hollywood movies. Yeah. They may tinker with the conventions, but they're not really busting them. Mm-hmm. Kick-Ass is a truly rebellious movie.
Yeah.
It is subversive mm-hmm. in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. And let's go, we'll just quickly go over the plot. We obviously don't have the audio for it for you guys to listen to. It's about a young man, a teenager, who maybe a little on the nerdy side, and he wonders why, with the popularity of superheroes, why aren't there any real superheroes? So he kind of tests it out. He orders himself a wetsuit with it, kind of comes with a mask, and gets himself a couple billy clubs and gets the crap kicked out of him. But he becomes a sensation because, of course, someone's got a video camera and records him being throttled and, laying a bit of a beating down on his own on these thugs, and becomes sort of the superhero, which then attracts the attention of these real superheroes led by, which is a kind of a dynamic duo of sorts led by Nicolas Cage playing Big Daddy and his little girl who he dubs, I don't remember their names without the masks on, but she is dubbed Hit Girl. And she's really, I think she's the real breakout star of the
show. Yeah, I remember, you know, this movie's got a lot of advanced buzz, mostly built around a Red Band trailer, which is to say an uncensored trailer.
Yeah.
That was basically all about Hit Girl's exploits where, I mean, you know, she just goes in and shoots people in the face and cuts their legs off and mm-hmm. calls them, you know, the F word, the mm-hmm. C word, the ABC, every word that's bad in the alphabet, she calls them.
Yeah. Yeah. So Austin, what did you think as someone of the younger persuasion? This is maybe geared a little toward the younger audience, I think. What do you think?
I am loving the age condescension for this episode. But
that was purely intentional.
Of course. I was looking forward to this movie, and I was actually a bit more disappointed than you guys. I still liked it quite a bit, and I'll love it if there's a sequel. But I think the biggest problem with this film is Kick-Ass is never as interesting as Red Mist, Hit Girl, or mm-hmm. Big Daddy. I think since so much time is devoted to him, I love the idea of very much, instead of you know Peter Parker being the best Spider-Man ever, mm-hmm. it's still Peter Parker under a mask, which is what they're going with here. I just didn't find that. I wish he wasn't the main character. Maybe I wish it was more of an ensemble because, like you guys said, Hit Girl is the breakout star. She is hilarious in every scene because she's the one who really knows how to fight. So her scenes are the most energetic and everything.
Yeah, and I do remember the scene early on where Nicolas Cage is you know he has trained her from the time she was born to be basically a bad guy killing machine. Mm-hmm. And he's talking her into letting him shoot her while she's wearing a bulletproof vest, and it was just fantastic. And you really see that the dichotomy of him, you know, being this, he's very much a doting, loving, you know, dad. And you know, there's the scene where he gives her the knives for her birthday, and it's actually was the or was that the other way around? What didn't she give him some present? Because I remember she throws out an F-bomb at him.
Well, she teases him at one point.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you want for your birthday? He's like, well, I want a puppy in the stallhouse and everything. And
yeah,
he's just in horror. He goes, no, I'm just kidding. I want this kind of switchblade. You know,
except she's not kidding. She's something else with him.
Yeah. And she was great. And the only other thing I'll be critical about, because there is a lot of fun with this movie, mm-hmm. is as rebellious as it is, there's so many parts of it, and I think it definitely is, the main romance between Kick-Ass and his girl is right out of Spider-Man. Like they don't play around with that as much, aside from an amusing subplot where she thinks he's gay for a good part
of
it. aside from that, it just becomes a traditional, like, you know, don't go out there, it's dangerous kind of thing. I was like, you had so much more to do something mm-hmm. rebellious with that. Like, be proud he's going out there and risking his life all the time. I don't know, just me.
Well, so here's what we thought of the movie Kick-Ass.
Now that was a good movie!
Alright, next up, we'll do a little shorter on some of these other video releases. We've got the French prison drama, A Prophet. Did everyone here see that one?
I saw that one.
I did not see that.
I loved it. I'm a sucker for any type of crime drama, and I really thought this was a great example of that genre. It's very gritty. It's realistic. It's not like the more romantic gangster movies you'd see, like The Godfather. But I really liked it a lot.
And this is one that was up for the best foreign film nomination last year
for the Oscars. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's got a bunch of different things going on in there, in that there's also this idea with the Muslim group within the prison, and then you've got kind of like the, I guess you'd call them like the Aryan types. So there's a whole bunch of different things going on, and this one main character who seems to be, you know, not having a foot in any of those worlds. You know, he's not of any world, but he has a foot in many of the worlds. And I thought it was really, very well done, extraordinarily well acted. The guy who plays the mob boss who becomes his protector / abuser / boss, I can't recall the actor's name, but he was wonderful in this.
It was surprisingly influenced by American crime films, I noticed. It kind of reminded me of a lot of 70s thrillers. The main character even looks like Al Pacino out of, you know, Dog Day Afternoon. So that was kind of surprising to see for a French film.
All right. So here's what we thought of A Prophet.
Now that was a good movie.
Next up, we've got another international film, British film, The Ghost Rider. And this is a very interesting one. It starts Ewan McGregor as a ghostwriter who's hired to write the autobiography for, essentially, it's Tony Blair.
Yeah.
It's really not very well veiled at all. I don't think it's intended to be veiled. It's Tony Blair. And I'm trying to remember, is it Pierce Brosnan that plays
this? Yes, absolutely.
Anyone have any particular thoughts about this movie?
I really liked it. I mean, I love the mystery genre, and I love it when they are portrayed well in cinema. There isn't a lot of dumbing down or anything. And it's only one moment when I questioned it a little bit. But besides that, I thought it was naturally suspenseful and always an engaging plot throughout. And Olivia Williams was great. She is a great actress.
Yes. Yeah,
yes. Not to mention I have had a huge crush on her for many years.
Oh, very, very deservedly so. Yeah, she's... Yeah,
I think I actually first remember seeing her was actually she was in Notting Hill and she played a minor character who was in a wheelchair, and then I was amazed to discover that the actress was not actually in a wheelchair, but she's very very talented, very powerful actress and gorgeous.
And I kind of thought it the film kind of. In the middle sag just a little bit.
Yeah.
It kind of lost me for just a couple minutes, but yeah, it was. And oh, and Kim Cattrall's British accent came and went like the breeze.
Well, luckily so did our character.
that was another thing. She disappeared and then all of a sudden she popped back up later on, but maybe that was by design. Maybe Polanski was kind of like, let's lose her for a few minutes.
Well,
and the ending is just dynamite. I thought it was a really great sort of Hitchcock kind of ending, which I of course you'd come to expect from Polanski, but it was fantastic.
The last shot is just visually beautiful.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say definitely a has Hitchcockian tones.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen it, definitely it's worth a rental.
All right, so here's what we think of the Ghost Rider.
Now that was a good movie.
We got two more video releases that we're going to touch on just very briefly. The first one is because Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which I believe is based on a popular book.
Yeah,
series of books.
I haven't seen it. I don't think Austin or Sam have seen it. Joe, I think you've seen about half of it.
Yeah, I tried to watch it last night, and I was really, I don't know if I was in a bad mood. I was really turned off by it. It seemed like just a bunch of kids in middle school talking like they were 30 years old and reminiscing on their middle school days. And there was one bit that made me laugh involving one character peeing on another. But the rest of it was very standard cliche Disney Channel jokes. Like I said, it was kids talking, reflecting with a wisdom they should not ever have had. It seemed like, the words were put in their mouth by, 40-year-old screenwriters who think this is how the kids talk nowadays, and they have never been around children in their lives or something, because it just didn't work out for me, and I was just like, okay, I'm just going
to... Yeah, I'm still curious to see this one, actually. It sounds interesting. I'm into that sort of nostalgic stuff, and plus any movie that celebrates, small, frail, wimpy kids, in other words, me, because I was certainly much that kid when I was in school, and I don't know. I'd be interested to see it.
I'll let you borrow it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Now, it's interesting. Have you ever noticed, though, that all the wimpy kids, get their revenge because they're the ones that end up being the screenwriters and the directors who make these movies?
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed no one ever makes a movie about being the bully or being the class jerk?
Yeah.
Because that guy never goes on to be successful.
We need to do that.
Wait, what about the Neil LaBute movies?
Well, maybe, but that's, it's not those guys when they were 12, those guys when they're 30 or 40 or whatever.
And they're worse.
Yeah, and they've just gotten worse.
There is actually a little bit of a nod to that in the film where one of the kids who was picking, and the thing is nobody really picks on him that much. It's more like a self-imposed kind of nerddom for them. That they have the kids who are there to pick
nerddom?
On them. Nerddom, yes. that's the word of the day.
Yeah.
And I got to use it in a sentence on the air, so.
Is it like geekeronomy or?
Geekeronomy, yeah. They're related sciences, so. But he's, there are the kids who they walk by and they say, make a comment to him, but. And he does make a comment at one point that, in 20 years, this guy will be working for me. And they do have this kind of a cute scene where there's this really buff guy sitting on a chair while the nerd is mowing, you know, or the bully is mowing his lawn, saying, "Please don't fire me." And he's sitting there and he speaks in the main character's voice, you know, his child voice, and saying, "Okay, no, I'm going to fire you anyway." You know, and it was just kind of a cute little aside, but it was, you know, it was not enough for me to even merit continue watching. So.
All right. And Joe, I think you had one more much smaller Fitty Reese that you wanted to mention.
I got a I actually got a hold of a copy of a film called Open House, which on the cover has Stephen Moyer and Anna Paquin, who of course star in True Blood on HBO.
Oh, you know, now that I think about it, I actually got this movie too, and I immediately put it into my bin that I movies that I'm going to get rid of.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I'll put it. You know, my wife loves True Blood. She's gotten me into watching True Blood, so I put it in. And those two are in the film a grand total of probably 3 minutes between them. Oh. They both die in the early parts of the first act, and then it goes off on this just bizarre. It's a bizarre kind of horror film that is not scary. So it's almost, I want to call it torture porn, but it's not even, there's not even any torture involved. It involves these people, these kind of psycho killers. Who are, I don't know if they're, I guess they're husband and wife or something, and they more or less abduct this woman, and at least the man does. The man is the very shy, introverted serial killer type. He abducts this woman and drugs her and secretly stashes her away in the basement to where his wife, who has a day job, doesn't realize that she's in there. So she comes home every night and still doesn't know there's another human being in the house. And so I guess you could call it abduction porn. And again, this was another case where I watched about 50 minutes of it, and I thought, I don't think this is going anywhere that I really want to care to see. And I shut it down. But
it's interesting, you know, since we look at the video releases for every week, you know, people don't realize how much straight to video stuff there is coming out. Almost every week, there's something, you know, starring actors that you've heard of.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're actually in the whole movie and not just for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing that, you know, sometimes you go on IMDb and look up an actor's resume, and you'll see a movie like, well, I don't remember that movie because it was some straight-to-video thing that nobody saw.
Yeah, I think Kevin Costner just recently did one that hit straight-to-video. And
yeah.
Christina Ricci has one, too, I think that's out. I think Liam Neeson was in it that just came out.
That was in a few theaters across the country, but never Indiana.
No.
So, yeah.
All right, well, we're going to take another short break, and then we'll be back with more film sociology goodness.
Report the passing of a famous, influential Hollywood figure, Tom Mankiewicz, who was a screenwriter, a producer. He actually did a pretty heavy rewrite of Superman the movie. He's involved with a couple of the Bond films, right, Austin?
Mm-hmm.
And he did pass away this past week, so we want to raise a glass, as Matt would say, to
as Matt would say,
and he has said and says to us all on a regular basis. And sometimes it's not in the context of celebrating someone; it's just for the sake of raising that particular glass. But we do want to recognize him for all of his efforts over the year. I apologize for not being a little more prepared. He had a long and distinguished career. Those are the things that I recall that jumped out. Maybe that he's most known for. So if you watch some of the extras on, I know on the Superman DVDs, one of those, you know, gigantic editions that came out a few years ago, he's actually featured very heavily. So a nod and a tip of the hat to Tom Mankiewicz for all of his contributions.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got a few minutes left, so we thought we'd take the time to, I guess, do a little bit of a summer wrap-up here. We're not really officially at the end of summer, but I think The Other Guys was really the only... I guess Julia Roberts' Eat, Pray, Love is going to be a pretty big release next week. But
Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, it seems like there's... anymore, it seems like August has one or maybe two kind of notable, worthwhile films, and then it, you know, then it's the dumping ground. I did see Scott Pilgrim, and I do believe the embargo still is in effect, so I can't tell you how awesome it was or was not.
You're so mean.
I cannot describe to you the depth of the ocean of awesome sauce in which it resides.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Or not. I'll give that a strong recommendation, or maybe I won't. You'll have to wait and see.
Well, why don't we'll go down the line here, starting with Sam, and just have everyone talk maybe, you know, a couple of movies that really stood out for you this summer and a couple maybe that disappointed you.
Well, I thought The Kids Are All Right was a good alternative to typical summer popcorn fare if you like movies about lesbian couples and the drama of their family lives. Inception, obviously, was a big standout. Winter's Bone, I don't know if you'd really consider that a summer movie since it was released earlier, but it's out now, and I would definitely suggest seeing that.
Mm-hmm. I have to give also the obvious answers of Inception and Toy Story 3 being the big highlights for this year. Two, just coming out of Hollywood, just really great, brilliant scripts, and just reminds you why you love movies. But a few more smaller ones, Winter's Bone, really loved that. I Am Love was this very... fascinating and sometimes bizarre Italian film. And also, what else? Did Exit Through the Gift Shop actually come out during the summer, or was that earlier?
I think it might have been May, which, as far as we're concerned, is summer.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. I really loved that documentary as well.
Yeah, I don't really have any kind of secret hidden gems, too, at least that you guys didn't already say. Winter's Bone, yes, was fantastic. Inception was incredible, and it's really, for me, the most... discussion-worthy film that's been around quite a long time.
Oh, yeah.
At least since The Human Centipede, which you know, is a much shorter discussion. It's basically, what do you think? And it's just a hard question to answer. Inception was so layered and interesting. And then, of course, there's that other one that I can't tell you whether it's good or not, which I may or may not recommend.
But you're including it in your wrap-up.
Am I doing that? I didn't notice. I did love Iron Man 2.
Really, you liked Iron Man 2?
I really did. Yeah, and I won't get into a long discussion about it. Yeah, I really liked it.
I didn't hate it, but I mean, I'm not sure. I haven't met anyone who didn't say it was a step down or two or five.
You know, I think it was right there at the original. And it's a different movie than the original one was, but for what it was intended to do, which is honestly set up the Avengers and Thor and Captain America, it did fine.
Speaking of which, total non sequitur here. Has anyone seen the Thor preview that's been out there on the web?
Yep.
Oh, scary. Oh, boy.
You know, I like it. I mean, I'm a huge Kenneth Branagh fan. I'm actually going in from that side of the geekery. we're just making up lots of words today.
Yeah.
But he's directed a bunch of some of my favorite films, so I'm looking forward to his take on it.
I don't want to see a movie about Thor, the disenfranchised guy, you know, traipsing around the desert like a cool biker dude without his bike. I don't want that. I want Thor with the hammer. He already knows he's a badass. He doesn't have to reprove it to anybody. Yeah, but anyway, total non-sequitur there. I'm with you guys there. Toy Story 3, Inception, Winter's Bone would probably be my triad of my favorite movies from the summer. Mm-hmm. Ones that disappointed me, Despicable Me, which is not to say that it was a bad movie. It was not. It was still pretty decent. Just I was really looking forward to that one, and I didn't get the movie that I thought I was going to get, and the movie that I did get was not what I wanted, and I just was disappointed by it.
What'd you think of Dinner for Schmucks?
I rather liked Dinner for Schmucks. Yeah. It was sort of like The Other Guys, much funnier than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was really built around a really great, bizarre, wonderful comic performance by Steve Carell, well, you know, he's one of these characters, you don't for a moment buy him as existing in the real world, but he's so much fun to be around and such a source of mirth that you really don't care. One other I did want to mention, it really did not do well at the box office, kind of came and went and died. I thought it was actually, in terms of the comedies, the funniest movie of the summer. The movie that I laughed the most and consistently and the hardest at was actually Get Him to the Greek.
That is one, actually, that's up there for one of my best of the summer and year. It was a really funny movie. Mm-hmm. I also like MacGruber a lot. So I laughed a lot during MacGruber.
Are you alone? Sam, did you see MacGruber?
I did not.
Okay. Well, then you're alone in that.
And no one saw that one at all. That one bombed in the box office.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I kept waiting for someone to do like a parody of the theme song and post it on YouTube of, you know, talking about how, what's the actor's name?
Will Forte.
Will Forte.
Yeah.
You know, something really funny and mean as well about, like, you know, they made their movie and now, what's his name again? I forgot it already.
Will Forte.
And Will Forte's career is over now. They're never going to let him make, it's the Tim Meadows effect. You know, he was a popular guy on the show, had basically the one character, they did a movie, and it died, and he's going to be Tim Meadows, and he's going to show up 10 years later in the equivalent of Grown Ups, and you're going to be like, oh yeah, Tim Meadows, remember him?
Well, didn't Will Forte also have the movie that bombed a few years ago, The Brothers Solomon? Did anyone see that?
Uh-huh. Which was actually pretty funny.
I never saw that one, but I know that he starred in it, and it, I think, bombed even worse than MacGruber, the box office, if that's possible.
One other thing, anyone see Flight of the Conchords? That show was on HBO.
I love that show, yeah.
Okay, I hate to say it, but I actually got the complete series DVD showed up in the mail, and I didn't even know what it was. And I just sort of threw it in the pile there. So.
It's this New Zealand band. They've been kind of doing some comedy circuits for a while, and it's Jermaine and Brett. I forget their last names, but...
Jermaine Clement actually is in Dinner for Smuts, too. Yeah. I was going to say he's very good in that.
I think he's going to be the main villain in Men in Black 3, oddly enough.
Yeah,
so he's going
right.
to have a career. But it's this band, and they're so awkward but so clever, and they do these kind of parodies on genres. Like one of their rap handles is the Rhymenoceros. Like that's their idea of their gangster name. And this show does a really good job of having this kind of day in the life of these guys. With their really funny music videos and with the plot.
All right. So I'll set that
awkward, kind of funny.
Oh, yeah.
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 All right. So I'll set that one aside for you, I guess.
Okay.
All right. Well, we've enjoyed being on the show this week, taking over. I believe Matthew is back again next week, hopefully. If not, who knows? Maybe he'll get stuck with us once again.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm from the team, thefilmyap.com. I'm Christopher Lloyd.
I'm Joe Shear.
I'm Austin Luger.
And I'm Sam Watermeyer.
All right. Thanks for having us. We'll see you next time.